Hello, welcome to Caterpillar Nation. I'm Jill Kimball, licensed clinical social worker and private practice therapist. Please follow me as we create a safe place to learn about mental health, mental illness, and mental wellness. We will explore the psychology of who we are and how we develop into our best mental health. Just like caterpillars who transform before becoming butterflies, we are also on a journey to find our best self. Stay tuned. Hello, and welcome to the first episode of Caterpillar Nation. I'm Jill Kimball. Today's episode is called Getting Help: How to Know When You Should Look for Help and What to Expect When You Go into Therapy. I created Caterpillar Nation because I think the more that we know about what's going on in our head, how we respond to stressors in our environment or with other people, leads us to be able to make better choices to maintain our mental health, and it allows us to have some insight into when we might need help. I hope that these conversations will inform you about your own psychology and what to expect when you go into therapy, but also to help lift the stigma so that it's easier for all of us to talk about mental illness, to talk about when things go wrong with our mind and how to get ourselves back on track. So let's start out talking about how can I tell if I need help? Of course, in everyone's lives, there's going to be ups and downs. Our ups happen when life is going smooth, job is rewarding, and the kids are cooperative, our health is in line, and we're feeling good. Those are our highs. And we have our lows because stuff happens, but also chemical imbalance happens. So some of us may know our own history of struggles with anxiety or depression, but other people still will have episodes where their mental health is causing them stress. So, of course, it's not dysfunctional to respond to stress. Actually, it would be dysfunctional if you didn't respond to stress. But sometimes the demands of stress overload our ability to react to it. We might hit the mother load of all stresses, and we can't come up with the resources internally or externally to help us come up with a healthy response. Now, by resources internally, I mean the things that we've learned. So if a person has good communication skills, that can help them respond to stress in ways that are more likely to lead them to have an outcome that they're satisfied with. If a person has an ability to calm themselves through meditation practices, deep breathing, relaxation, then when stress hits, they can take a beat and not respond right away. But sometimes we will notice that we've been carrying a stress for a while, and it is starting to make us lose our interest in the things that used to bring us pleasure. Or we find ourselves worrying and fretting all the time about the great unknown. Like, what if? What if this happens? I'm an expert at this. Actually, I can completely deconstruct my life in about 1 minute. So again, it's normal. It's normal for our minds under pressure to have some kind of reaction. But sometimes the reaction interferes with our happiness. It can give us low energy, make us distracted, and have a difficult time concentrating. Other times, it might lead us to isolate ourselves from our friends or family, or barely have enough energy just to work and then come home. Alternatively, your reaction might be that you're real crabby, or you get into conflict with your family easily. Another sign can be if you're having trouble sleeping. And I always break it down into, are you having trouble falling asleep, staying asleep, or waking up early in the morning? All of those can be problematic when we know that sleep is one of the things that really contributes to our best mental health. Some people have changes in appetite, and that could be in either direction. Certainly, we've seen the situation where bad news, sad news, and we just lose our appetite. And other times, demands are so high that we turn towards comfort eating. And when that happens, we're also not happy with our life. So any of those stress reactions would be a good reason to seek some help. Because when you come into therapy or counseling, by the way, therapy and counseling are the same thing, just people call them different things, and most mental health professionals are fine with whatever you call them. So for some people, therapy will be a short-term situation. Sometimes it may just be a couple sessions to get yourself back on track, establish some coping, get some insight into your reactions. Other times it could be 8 to 10 sessions. Really, we hope that we see noticeable progress with clients within 8 to 10 sessions. That doesn't mean that they won't continue to benefit from therapy. Here's the thing, that sometimes people come in looking for help with stress, and what I later discover is early life injuries that have not been processed, traumas, anxieties, and sometimes people benefit from longer term treatment. Some of us live with mental illness like anxiety or depression. And this is so hard for people to understand who don't have these experiences. Later in this podcast series, I will be dedicating an entire episode to anxiety, and I'll be talking quite a bit about mood problems. What you should know, anxiety is not just being nervous. Anxiety is carrying a sense of doom, feeling like you're so certain that something bad is going to happen and you can't get it out of your head. And you think about it all the time, or you think about worst case scenario all the time. I used to be really good at this. I could completely deconstruct my life with one leading comment. Here's the ACER that really helped me get myself back on track. I had a director, and in between therapy sessions, she said, "Hey Jill, when you're done with your next session, can you come and talk to me?" Of course. I kind of freaked out. And so I'm in session. I'm thinking, I forgot to sign something. I'm going to lose my license. There's been a complaint. I'm losing my job. By the end of session, I was so distracted, and I had gotten to the point of imagining myself homeless. Well, not completely homeless. I was going to live in my sister's attic. So I take my client out, and I go into the director's office, and she asks me, "So Jill, we're ordering magazines for the waiting room. Are there any that you want us to avoid or that you wanted us to get?" It was a great lesson in how my mind can play tricks on me. And that's kind of the path of anxiety. It doesn't look that way for everyone, but that's a great example. And when we talk about depression, it's a lot different than just sadness. Although sadness can and often is a big part of depression. Depression is a darkness. It is a loss of joy and interest in the things that used to make us feel good. It can include social isolation, where we just don't feel like being around other people. Low energy, low motivation, sleep and appetite interruptions, sometimes crying, but not always, sometimes anger. And it's not uncommon for depressed people to have the thought of things would just be easier if I were dead. I know the word suicide is a scary word, and we should always take it seriously when we hear it. But again, this darkness of depression can make it so that people who have no intention of harming themselves and would never want to hurt their family just get to that point where they wish they were dead. So sometimes some will go into therapy because of a stress reaction or a hard time in their life. Other times it might be because of a mental health flare-up. If our anxiety isn't responding to our healthy lifestyle habits or our meditation, talk therapy is helpful, especially with anxiety. Anxiety is one of the most common forms of issues that come into doctor's offices and therapy offices, and it responds really well to talk therapy. Depression is a hard one to break without therapeutic support. So those are the things that might bring you in. So let's talk about finding therapy. Of course, right now we know that there's a shortage of mental health providers, and this is problematic, especially at a time when more and more people are experiencing mental illness and stressors with their mental health. Rates of anxiety and depression in young people are way up, and there's just not enough providers out there. I wish there were. I wish I could double and triple myself so that more and more people could access the help that I have to give. So, where to start? I think that the best place to start is always with our natural helpers. So this can be talking to a trusted friend. It could be, for young people, talking to a coach or a teacher or school social worker. It could be talking to your pastor or a relative that you really trust. Sometimes that's enough. Other times we need that, and we need to enhance our self-care. We need to make sure we're getting good sleep and we're hydrated and eating well, avoiding substances and doing self-care like physical activity, getting outside, pursuing hobbies. But at other times, it's really professional help that we need. So a great place to start is with your health insurance. Your health insurance will pay for some portion of therapy, deductible excluded, of course. So looking for a provider that accepts your insurance is a big deal, because if you have benefits, you want to be able to use them. So I recommend calling the phone number on the back of your insurance card or going to your insurance company's website to look for a list of providers. It is completely acceptable to call a therapy office and ask, do they accept your insurance? I have found, and I guess this is a free advertisement for Psychology Today, that www.psychologytoday.com has a provider list. And this is a list that providers pay to be on. And they advertise their specialties, their location, and the insurances that they take. So that can also be a good place. I think the other great place is to ask friends or ask your doctor, who do you recommend for dealing with this problem? So then start out with a phone interview. ask for a couple minutes of the therapist's time just to get a feel of, do they have experience in the issue that is bringing you in? But also, do you get a comfy feeling? Does it feel like what you hear from them and how they describe it is something that would work for you? And then, of course, the next step would be having a first-time appointment. Most therapy clinics ask you to do intake forms, and this will be a combination of basic demographics, also health questions, stress and mental health questions. You'll sign forms giving permission for them to bill insurances, and they, of course, would want emergency contact information and things like that. You should know that when you go into therapy, you have the right to be treated with dignity and respect. Your therapist is held to strict confidentiality. They are legally not allowed to share any information that you share with them unless you report the abuse of a child or an elder, or if there's a life-threatening emergency. So how would that work? If you're in a therapy office and you describe child abuse, the therapist would let you know, I need to report that to Protective Services because I'm a mandated reporter. If you're in danger of harming yourself and the therapist is concerned about your well-being, they might break confidentiality to call your support person. Usually, we try to work with the client and help them figure out more intense levels of service if that's where they're at. But otherwise, everything you talk about is your private business, including whether or not you come to therapy. I've had people ask me or tell me, usually it's because their friend sees me or something, oh yeah, I know so-and-so comes and sees you. And I say I can't confirm or deny if I know anyone. Because again, that is your private information. So after you do the paperwork, you will meet alone with a therapist and you'll spend some time warming up. They will be asking things about you and you'll get an idea of, is this a good fit or not? Then usually the therapist will be gathering information to determine if you might meet the criteria for mental health diagnosis. It's very common in practice that we use adjustment disorder diagnoses. This indicates that the person is having mental health problems related to a life stressor, and that we imagine with some attention and as this issue resolves, that the person will be back on their way to good mental health. So once the therapist understands what's bringing you there, they have an idea of whether or not you're dealing with some kind of mental illness, the two of you will talk about your goals for therapy. That might sound like, so client, tell me what's bringing you in today. And then it might go in the direction of, if therapy was helpful for you, what differences would you notice in your life? We like to come up with some clear goals. They might say things like improved mood, improved pursuit of joy and hobbies, improved sleep, reduced anxiety, improved coping, improved stress management and communication. So by the time you leave, you should have a good idea about what's your course of treatment and what goals are you working on. If you haven't gotten that far during the first session, definitely ask your therapist. I always tell people, this time is your time. So if you have a question or if I'm on the wrong track, if I'm bringing up something that really doesn't bother you and you want to talk about something else, please let me know. The other thing I tell people is there's a good chance that just because I have so many different ideas that I might come up with an idea that just does not fit you. I might talk about how journaling is going to be great, or meditation, role-playing a troubling situation. And you always have the right to say, I'm not comfortable with that. And another thing, if your therapist gives you homework, of course, it's up to you to do that homework. You're the one who benefits from that extra outside of therapy work. But don't skip therapy just because you didn't get your homework done. We understand that life happens. Most therapists expect you to give them at least a 24-hour notice before canceling an appointment. And if you're ever sick on the day of an appointment, let the office know as soon as you realize that you shouldn't come in. COVID has changed this. You know, we don't want people to come to work sick or come to appointments sick. And so as soon as you know you can't come in, it helps the therapist, because sometimes we have waiting lists of people who say, if you have anything open today, give me a call, and then we'll reach out to them. The other thing is that therapy might happen via telehealth, and that might be like on a protected Zoom line or Doxy. There are a couple different formats that allow for video telehealth sessions. It is also the case that you can have phone sessions. Different insurances have different kind of benefits, and hopefully the office you go to can help you understand what your benefits are. So I have had the case where I don't feel good, I'm not sure if I'm sick, can we switch to telehealth? And in those situations, I will send the client a Zoom link and we will meet via telehealth. So after that, you'll talk with the therapist about how often you'll be coming in. If there's an intense stressor going on, or a person is brand new to therapy or with children, it feels like more frequent is better. It helps you warm up to the provider. It helps you stay clear about what you're working on. And if problems are less intense, because sometimes people come into therapy in the pursuit of personal development. They know something about themselves that is dysfunctional and they want to learn more. And in those situations, we might say every other week or a couple times a month is just fine. So talk with your therapist about what the frequency will look like. I always let my clients know, if I'm very concerned about your well-being, I will recommend more frequent sessions. I've had some people who've had a good day come into session and then say to me, it was a good day, but then I was afraid that you were going to kick me out of therapy. First of all, to me, it always seems like there's something to work on. But if you're making such good progress in therapy that you need less services, then I'll recommend that. I'll say, let's start skipping a week. Let's meet once a month. Let's meet as needed. I hope today's podcast was helpful for you in understanding what goes on, stress reactions, and how to know when to get help and where to go, and then what to expect the first time you go in. It might surprise you. I had a client that was an ER physician, and when they came into therapy, they honestly didn't know what to expect. This shocked me, because I thought, this person is probably coming into contact with people who have mental health crisis all the time. And if they are referring a person to counseling but don't know what to expect, that seems really problematic. So information is power. Thank you for being part of this first episode of Caterpillar Nation. My name is Jill Kimball. A podcast can never take the place of professional mental health services. If you're in crisis, text 988 or call 1-800-273-TALK. please check out my website, www.caterpillarnation.com, and my new Facebook group, Caterpillar Nation 2024. If you like what you heard, please follow, rate, and review. Remember, the journey to health begins with knowledge. Stay informed, stay empowered. Until next time, keep learning and growing. Take care.